Okay, so my name is Tim Jones, and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and the One Another Project in Trafalgar Square. It's the 15th of August, 2009, and the time is 6:20 p.m. Can you tell us what your name is, your age, and where you come from?
My name is Martin Steamson Reed. I'm 39 years old, and I come from the North East, but originally I come from a place called Dudley in the West Midlands.
Okay, thank you. Can you tell us when it was you first found out about the One Another Project?
I think it was one of my nocturnal sessions on the internet, on eBay and places like that, and then I came across the One Another website, and I thought, oh, I'll have a go at that, and I clicked the button, and then I forgot about it for a few weeks, and then I got an email saying congratulations.
So how did you feel when you received that email to say you've been allocated a slot?
Well, my initial thoughts are, what am I going to say to my wife? Because I'd completely not mentioned anything about it, and I'd completely forgotten about the whole thing. So, yeah, it was an interesting conversation, and it's been an interesting few weeks since finding out, really, and thinking about what I'm going to do and the prep and stuff.
So what is it you are going to do when you're up there for an hour?
Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to... No. I'm going to dress as a king, and I'm going to sit down for a bit, because I've been walking around London all day, legs are tired. I'll have a little walk around and a wave at people, but I've got some background music as well, which is it's sounds of the sea, so it's just it's waves lapping against the shore with the occasional bit of poignant music over the top of it, at which point I'll be looking enigmatically into the distance, and I'm going to take my camera up there with me as well, so I'm just trying to get used to using video cameras and stuff, so it's a good chance to practice my videoing skills while I'm up there as well.
So how do you think this kind of experience is going to affect you?
Well, I'm hoping that somebody's going to see me up there and recruit me and pay me a sort of multi-million pound wage, but outside of that, it's going to give me something to dine out on for a very long time, so conversations won't run dry at the dinner table. I don't know. You know, it might be the start of something completely new. A lot of this is me kind of changing my routine, and you know, I'm hurtling towards my 40s. It was my 39th birthday a couple weeks ago, and it's a time where you take stock and you kind of think about the routine or maybe the rut that you've sort of evolved over a time, and it's time for me to change things, really. Like I say, change my routine and maybe start doing things a little bit differently, just explore new things. So who knows, really, is the answer to that question, but that's kind of the point. It's the unexpected. It's not being able to know exactly what you're going to be doing next Thursday at 2 o'clock. It's adding a little bit of kind of excitement and novelty and exploration of possibilities, really, where you've kind of possibly closed doors and sort of become a little bit predictable with things, because there's certainly nothing predictable about going up on the plinth. I have no idea what's going to happen up there, apart from my loose plan. Yes.
And how would you give us a little bit of insight into then, kind of like, you know, what you've been up to, how you spend your time kind of up until now, what it is you do?
Well, the preparation.
Your interests are kind of on a more general scale. What it is you do over a week and a weekend?
Well, I design training courses. I like to walk my dogs. I like to watch the odd TV programme. I like to get out in the garden. And I do have a good routine, actually. It's very nice, you know. It's a nice kind of it's a nice life. But Outside of that, I have... That's the kind of general thing, really. I do have kind of like interest in technology and stuff like that. And I think probably to a large extent, I'm possibly a frustrated performer. And, you know, if I can find a creative outlet, even in the most mundane of things, I'll probably try and do that. So this is, you know, this kind of hardcore creativity that I've been able to sort of really just get a few things out of my system. So hopefully I'll be a lot less annoying in the future.
I mean, how did you get into, tell us a little bit about kind of designing for these training courses. How did you get into that? And what is it?
It's really just it's designing training courses for call centres. It doesn't get any more interesting than that. And it's you know, it is a creative job, possibly not so much recently, which is maybe a, you know, because I've been dealing a lot more with the kind of the management of things rather than being there in the cutting room. So I guess, you know, looking back, a lot of the fact that I've had one of my creative outlets kind of stifled over the last, say, 12 months, it's probably been one of the kind of subconscious factors that has forced me to try and find creative outlets elsewhere. Well done, Doctor. I'll be in tears in a bit, won't I? Yeah, yeah. It all started when I was 5. Yeah, yeah.
So that's about kind of like that. So you say kind of you're a frustrated performer. What's your kind of interest in performing and the arts and creativity?
I think singing, really, primarily. I do like to sing in the shower and in the car very loudly. I do like a dance at the Christmas disco. And I'm normally the person that's got a ring of people clapping around them. with the Benga Boys playing over the top. But outside of that, nothing formal. And you know, that might be something again for the future. I've been thinking, playing with the idea of maybe singing lessons over the last year, to do something a little bit more formally. Because I do think I've got some talent, not as much as Susan Boyle, of course, but you know, who has? And I think I do have an innate talent for making people laugh as well. Sometimes not actually. As a deliberate plan, so you know, there's lots of sort of talents there, I think, to play with, he said modestly, but maybe more in a kind of a formal way. One of my brothers is an actor, and you know, he's been in Coronation Street and EastEnders and all of that, you know, occasionally, and the other one, my other brother, is a Methodist minister, so of course, you know, he performs regularly in front of a captive audience. I don't know if it's the doors or anything, but so yeah, I think maybe, you know, there's a common thread of mix of eccentricity and desire to be heard from me and my siblings.
What kind of impact then would you like your hour on the plinth to have?
Upon whom?
Upon the general public and Great Britain, just being a part of the project, those who witness it.
I have to say that, and this is going to sound awful, but I haven't really thought too much about them. I've mainly thought about having a bit of me time. And whatever they think of it. And I guess, you know, when we say what is art, you could say what is mart as well, really. You know, what is one man's poison, one man's meat? Everybody's got a different kind of kind of perception on what they're seeing up there. And if I just present myself and I'm true to myself, and I do what I, you know, I don't just lay on with a trail as to what it's supposed to be all about. If I have some, I mean, I doubt there's going to be a lot of subtlety up there with what I'm doing, but at the end of the day, I know what it's all about. If other people have got different kind of perceptions and takes on that, and it causes some kind of debate or you know, conversation, then I think that's probably the same kind of intention that any kind of artwork normally has when it comes out. You know, it's all about the eye of the beholder. So I don't want them to have any kind of spoon-fed impact or anything like that. Make of it what you will, but just don't throw tomatoes.
So who would you say then you're doing this for?
I'm doing it for me, really. I would like to think I'm not a particularly selfish person, and I don't really do a lot out of self-interest ever. So this is really kind of, you know, it's coming up to a jubilee for me next year, and I'm going to just mark it with, you know, a little sort of me time. It's all about me time, really. But that isn't the typical scenario. So it's got to happen sometimes, hasn't it? I'll shut up again for the next 40 years.
what things would you say that are most important to you then at the moment in your life?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, my wife's definitely the most important thing to me. And having a quiet life with no drama. And you'd say, well, why are you here if you want a quiet life with no drama? And it's a very good question. Don't ask that question next. Yeah, just a happy home. Just a happy home with, you know, just some good times, really. Some good times, but some different times. Just so we can, you know, we can look back and build some good memories, really. And I don't think I can replace this memory that I'm going to have today, really. It's definitely going to be taking up a lot of the scrapbook pages, metaphorically.
And you mentioned kind of the future. Maybe when you hit your 40, there might be some change. What kind of hopes and ideas have you got for the future?
I haven't got a clue. Hopes and dreams for the future. I'd like to be incredibly rich. And have a lot of spare time to spend that money exploring things, experiences in different places and stuff like that, rather than being necessarily, you know, kind of boxed into routine and stuff like that. But hopefully my boss isn't kind of listening to this at the moment, and I love my job, and yes, I will definitely do that over time.
and what are your let's before we go to closing thoughts about being part of the project, then tell us how you're feeling right now before you go up on the plinth, and what emotions you're experiencing right now.
I've really, I don't know if it's because I don't quite fully understand the enormity of what I'm doing, but my wife's been a whole lot more nervous about this than I have. She's kind of nervous by proxy, and her nerves are kind of making me think, is there something I haven't realised? And that's what's making me nervous and more than actually doing the thing itself. So if you're listening to this, shame on you. But I'm a little bit nervous, a little bit exhilarated. But I'm kind of I'm focusing on that Peroni that I'm gonna have at 8:30. I'm looking at the horizon line, and that's what's kind of motivating me through it, really. So yeah, I'll go up there. I'll see what happens, and that will be that done, and then we'll see what the situation is then.
And what are your closing thoughts on being like one of 2,400 as part of the One Another project?
I don't. It feels almost like destiny. To be honest with you, it always felt like it's what I ought to have been doing, it just feels right. That's probably why I don't feel particularly nervous, is because it just actually just, for some reason, it just feels very kind of planned out for me. I don't know, that sounds really spooky and superstitious, doesn't it? But I felt quite unique for a while, actually, and I was enjoying that kind of feeling of being special. But then one of my friends posted on Facebook that she's looking forward to seeing me and one of her other friends on the plinth today. I was thinking, how can you know two people on the plinth on one day? It's like, how many friends have you got? So that's remarkable, that is. But it hasn't tarnished my feeling of specialness too much.
Okay, great, thank you.
Thank you.